You are listening to AVFC Extra, a no-nonsense look at the club we all love. Brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast.
Hello and welcome to AVFC Extra. I'm James Rushton, and today we've got to talk about Leeds United. Of course, we have to, after a kind of gloating in dragging a Liverpool fan on to kind of pick through the bones of a 7-2 Villa victory over his beloved club. We've now had to invite a Leeds fan onto the podcast to speak about Leeds United's victory over Villa. Of course, Villa's first loss of the season. So I'll tell you what's so bad about Villa's first loss of the season. It's bad enough them losing, right? But it's bad enough them losing to Leeds United. It's then bad enough that my mate John McKenzie is a Leeds United fan and I've got to speak to him about this loss on the podcast. It's also bad that people paid $14.95 to watch Villa lose to Leeds United. It's also bad that I didn't pay that $14.95. Thus, I've had to listen to the result and watch the match again in preparation for this podcast. But without any further messing around, this is Villa Extra and we're talking to John McKenzie about Villa versus Leeds United. How you doing, John?
Yeah, really good. How are you feeling after what was probably not a very fun game for you?
As I said in the intro, it's one thing having the first loss of the season. It's another it being to Leeds, and it's another not paying for it, but listening on the radio, then having to watch the entire thing again after knowing what's happened. Tough. But look, it's a positive start to the season. I'll ask you more in depth about that. But for our listeners, our viewers, who are you? What are you doing here?
My name is John McKenzie. I'm a freelance journalist covering mainly football. I do lots of other things as well, but I also run All Stats Aren't We, which is a Leeds United fan channel, which basically focuses on the tactics and the stats side of things, although we cover pretty much everything that's going on.
Yeah, I saw on your Patreon feed that you had like a match of the day style analysis of a few matches, and I just couldn't bear to do it, John. Not directly after. I can't be doing it. I can't be watching my Villa go through that again. It was a complete rundown. But look, great start to the season for both clubs. I didn't expect us to both be up here, and I think that's a massive positive. How are you feeling about being that far up the table so early on?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're what, like six games in? You've got a game in hand as well, so it's very early days. I guess for you guys, the thinking has got to be you were within a hair's breadth of relegation last season, and to start off this way is just going to change your season irrevocably. It's probably going to be the case that you're quite comfortable staying up if you can keep up the sort of performances you've been doing. And you know, I was looking at the table for us as well, and just sort of thinking there's already teams that we're three wins clear of at this point in the season. That's a really good boost for teams like Villa and Leeds, whose first thought will be, let's be honest, staying up in the division this season. So yeah, it's nice to see Villa doing well. It's nice to see us coming into the division and looking competitive, because we know we played well in the Championship, but there's no guarantee that playing well in the Championship is going to translate well into the Premier League. So I think for me, I'm trying to be very balanced about it and just sort of not really make my mind up until we're sort of 10 games into the season, and then the league table will settle down. But one thing I would say is that a lot of the big clubs do seem to be wobbling a little bit, and so the table's probably never been more open than it is now. So yeah, I think these are all good signs for both Villa and Leeds.
Yeah, I think I worked it out after our Leicester win. The points we have, if the season was to play out from this point on exactly as it played out last season, you know, Villa would be, 12 points ahead of them, about 9 points ahead of themselves, because they beat Everton. So that, I think, puts them about 12th, 13th in last season's table. But as we both know, going a bit off script here, it's been a crazy start to the season. It looks like everyone's beaten everyone in that cyclical motion that the Premier League has, where everyone on their day can beat everyone. But we've seen that, and that's been realised a lot sooner. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just comes down to the fact that we've not had pre-season in the same sort of way that we've had it before. The long break, obviously, last season for coronavirus has led to a sort of weird summer. And no doubt clubs' periodisation schedules, so their fitness schedules, will have been upset by that. There will be weird things happening to players' bodies. We know that there's going to be increased injuries, particularly sort of muscle and soft tissue injuries this season because of that. And I think, again, managers are having to rotate a little bit more than they would like to try and avoid that as well. So I was reading an article on The Athletic actually about Leicester City because we're playing them next. And what I found interesting about that is even 5-6 games in, looking at their underlying numbers, they're putting up very different numbers to what they were doing last season. And I think a lot of that comes down to what I'm saying there about not wanting to press quite so heavy, because they know that if they go all guns blazing this season, that is going to come a point in the season where they'll be missing players and stuff. So certainly a concern for a team like Leeds, whose identity is sort of tied up with being all action and heavy pressing. So yeah, lots of interesting things to look at this season. But I do think it will probably sort of calm down at some point when eventually we sort of reach a point that teams would have reached if they'd have had proper full pre-season schedules.
It's about taking advantage of the time we've got, which I think Villa and Leeds, especially Leeds after beating Villa, especially Villa as well, having that game in hand, have both done a fine job of that. But before we rip the plaster off, got to get down to it eventually. But what has Leeds' style been under Marcelo Bielsa?
That's two answers to this question, I think, because obviously we've gone from being in the Championship and being a very dominant side in the Championship to coming into the Premier League and being a sort of underdog in most of our games. And so the really interesting question is going to be, how do you go from being a team that is a predominantly high possession team to what is now a team who are going to I'm not saying that we're not going to be high possession. We're not going to be as high possession as we were, obviously. And we have, we matched Liverpool pretty much for possession, which is quite impressive. But at the same time, you aren't going to be able to play the same sort of football that you're playing without 60% possession on the board. So this season we've come out and been a lot more direct, I think, and this is going to be the watchword that I use a lot in this show about the way that we were with Villa. But it seems as though we're concentrating a lot of our attacks through our wide players. We're trying to get down the lines anyway. This is what we did last season, but it does feel as though we're trying to be a little bit more, I wouldn't say counter-attacking, but maybe a little bit more direct to winning the ball back and then trying to get into the opposition box. Pat Bamford's enjoying life in the Premier League. A lot of people are quite critical of him.
Yeah, don't say his name last season. It's like Voldemort. Sorry, yeah, he shall not be named.
Yeah. I'll try and keep mentions to him down to a minimum, but again, he's very much enjoying being what we like to call a front foot striker, where he's sort of rather than being in the box and receiving the ball and having to work around a sort of tightly packed defence, he's now being able to take the ball into the box a little bit more and have a little bit more space to get those shots away. Maybe a bit too much space in Villa's case, but I'm sure that's something we're going to get onto. But yeah, with Bielsa, you're looking at high possession in terms of keeping the ball, but building up down the wide areas through the fullbacks. And then when the ball is lost, like a lot of high possession teams do, having a fairly aggressive press to try and win the ball back quickly so that your defence isn't under too much pressure. And then the other defining feature is he uses a sort of man-marking system out of possession as well, which is quite unusual, particularly in the Premier League. So if you watch a Bielsa game this season, just have a look to see which player is marking which player, because they'll almost invariably keep their players through the whole game, and you can sort of orientate where the structure defensively is going to be by where the opposition players are positionally as well. So it's very interesting stuff.
So again, going a bit off script here, because that's lit off a little light bulb in my head, because I remember the Villa Leeds game that occurred in our promotion season, I think two seasons ago now, it seems like years and years, eons ago. But I remember Calvin Phillips being specifically he seemed to be very much on Jack Grealish's case. And I mean, would that have followed through and it been Pascal, was it Strike? He was kind of in a similar position, keeping tabs on Grealish.
Yeah, so obviously when we played 2 years ago, Grealish was playing as more of an eight, played a little bit deeper, you'll remember that season. And as a result of that, he was the responsibility of Calvin Phillips. Actually, I think on Friday, was more tasked with covering Grealish, because obviously Grealish now plays out on the left. So there was a lot of people who kind of were talking about the Pascal Strauch early substitution. because he obviously got that yellow card against Grealish and then put in a bit of a shonky challenge against Douglas Luiz. But I actually think that the reason why that, I think the yellow card does come into it, but I also think that there was a tactical element to that. I think Bielsa expected Villa to come out in a different structure off out of possession, and so it threw him a little bit. And I think partly because of the yellow card, but also partly because Villa played with a flatter midfield three than they had done in their previous games, with Ross Barkley dropping in alongside McGinn and Luiz rather than playing in front of them. I think Bielsa also sort of used that as a reason to bring Strauch off as well. So yeah, you know, look, Strauch would have had to do some coverage of Grealish, and one of the things we looked at actually in our post-match review is the way that Leeds kept Grealish quiet by doubling up onto him. And it's kind of interesting looking at the way that the man-marking system sort of reorientates itself after when you know, everyone's marking a man, but then some players can then drop their men and go and close down Grealish as well. And, you know, it's a testament to just how good a player Grealish is that Leeds would approach the game in that way.
Thanks for saying that. You passed the test now. You're allowed to carry on with the rest of the
You'll get nothing bad about Jack Grealish from me. Leeds fans absolutely hate him because he is quote-unquote divey. But I just think, you know, he earns the right to go down in challenges because he gets fouled a lot. He's also just one. He's probably the best ball retainer in the Premier League, give or take a couple of players. He's just an incredible player, and he is, you know, he's the fulcrum around which Villa move. He's got the highest progressive carries in the division, and I think that's a real testament to just how brilliant a player is. So you're not going to hear anything negative about Jack Grealish from me, I'm afraid.
Well, brilliant, Villa fans, you can carry on listening. There's not going to be a bad word. This is going to be a safe space from here on in. But yeah, on that point, there's always a player, I think, because I was on BBC Radio Leicester before the Villa-Leicester game. They said, how do you stop Jack Grealish? And I go, you can't really stop Jack Grealish unless he mucks something up himself. He does his job well. And he goes, yeah. And they go, yeah, he's diving. And I think, yeah, every club has their bias. I mean, Villa hate Patrick Bamford. I can't say his name out loud. Leeds fans, obviously, there's a bit of angst about Jack Grealish. You know, I think every club has that tribal bias. There is a player that they pick on that they just don't like, and the reason might be valid, it might not be valid, but I think just part of accepting football, isn't it, that we're not always gonna get along, right?
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, there's always a reason why you hate players like that, right? And it's not because they dive, it's because they cause you problems throughout. And Jack Grealish had a couple of gilt-edged chances. We relied on Luke Ayling clearing off the line for one of them, and then he had a bit of a poor shot on his right for one of them as well. But if either of those two goes in, then you know, you could easily be in a situation where the game changes. And it felt to me as though Villa really dropped off after the first Leeds goal went in, partly I think because of the tactical changes that happened in the second half, but also partly because, you know, it's hard to go a goal down and come back from. I think that's the first time you'd been a goal down this season. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky to come back from those situations.
Yeah, so time to rip the plaster off. We've got to get it over. We've got to get into this match. So firstly, was it typical of Leeds under Bielsa? They weren't doing too much different things to kind of what you've explained already?
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, so I spent a lot of the preview, the stuff previewing this match, just sort of looking at the way that Villa had played, especially after Ross Barkley has come in, and just looking at the way that you obviously Villa play in a mid block, and that the purpose of a mid block is to sort of to give yourself a sort of defensive structure that's like hard to break down. It covers your defense. Everyone has their zone and they cover that zone, and everyone knows where they're at. And with Ross Barkley in the team, you've been sort of playing as a 4-4-2 with Barkley pushing up alongside Ollie Watkins out of possession and just giving a little bit more solidity in the central area, stopping defenders from coming through the middle. And then you've got a four-man midfield with the two wide players, so Trezeguet and Grealish, dropping back alongside McGinn and Luiz. You play that against Liverpool, you play that against Leicester, and it worked really well because it sort of gave you a nice wide coverage of the field. I was very surprised when you came out and you basically defended in either 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1, because it just meant that you had a very, very narrow midfield three, and Leeds just basically caused you so many problems in wide areas, and they just recycled the ball from side to side. So Leeds used the way that Villa were playing to punish you both vertically and horizontally, I'd say. In the first half, you'd see Leeds switching play from side to side quite a lot. And then in the second half in particular, they just went way more direct. And I think I've already mentioned the Pascal strike substitution. And I think the reason why they brought Jamie Shackleton on and dropped Click back was, again, they just wanted to try and get in as quickly as possible into forward position so that they could get in behind your wide players, so Grealish and Trezeguet, and just attack your fullbacks and get our wingers isolated one-on-one against your fullbacks. And your midfield was so narrow and your front three was so advanced that it just caused a lot of spaces down the sides. And it surprised me because, one, we play structurally very similar to the way that Leicester and Liverpool play. And two, you know, everyone knows that Leeds are a very wide attacking team. And so it seemed strange to me that that it seemed as though Dean Smith maybe was trying to protect the centre a little bit more than maybe the wide areas. And I think that was basically what did it. I think the three goals, if you look at them, the first one is 20 seconds from our own corner flag to the Villa goal. The second one is a Ross Barkley turnover in the midfield area, and then it's 10 seconds until the ball's in the back of the net. And then the third goal is, it goes from Melier, the Leeds goalkeeper, to the Villa goal in 20 seconds as well. Really, really quick transitional play. And I think that's really what did it for Villa, unfortunately.
So a big part of that would be what occurs pre-match, right? I know a lot was made of how Bielsa had his own special setup at the training ground. That's all managers do, but I think a lot was definitely made of Bielsa's own setup. I mean, was it sleeping quarters and bunks at Thorpe Arch? Is that correct?
Yeah, they've got like sleeping pods. They do long days. I think they do sort of like nine. They do at least 9 to 5, maybe later 9 to 7 sometimes, depending on how many training sessions they're going to do. And so Bielsa's built them these sort of living quarters where, because obviously you're not going to be playing the whole time. So there's places where they can go and just sort of relax and read and also have a sleep if they need to. So yeah, he's very, very heavy on the prep side of things. And obviously everyone knows with the Spygate incident that, you know, he is obsessive in his preparation in terms of trying to work out what it is that the opponents will do.
So how much time do you think a man like Bielsa and his analysts put into, you know, analysing Villa ahead of the match? Where does that start? Like, what's the timeline for that, do you think?
Yeah, they'll be working a few weeks in advance in terms of the video analysis. They'll have watched every game Villa played this season, obviously, and probably quite a lot of what they played over the summer and before the summer, et cetera, et cetera. So they'll have a really good sense of what is going on in terms of the tactical tweaks that Dean Smith could make. Again, I mean, they will put in more effort than they need to. I mean, Bielsa is obsessive and he admits this. And, you know, there's a sense in which, you know, you can be too obsessive in this regard. You can over-prepare for things. And that's why I sort of made the point that I actually think Bielsa was surprised by the way that Dean Smith came out in that 4-4-5-1 mid-block. And I think that's why he changed Pascal Strauch over quite quickly. Because actually, if you watch back over Strauch's game in the first 20 minutes before he comes off, he actually doesn't do much wrong apart from those two challenges. And there's been plenty of examples before of players getting a yellow card early on and then just playing out the rest of the game without making another foul. So I think it's more tactical, and I think Bielsa was probably surprised at that. And in the second half as well, I think Leeds then came out a bit more direct. He sort of encouraged them to try and get forward quicker as well. So one of the things that you can look at with Marcelo Bielsa is, I know that Smarter Scout have done this sort of stuff, but looking at the impact that he has in the second half is quite notable. I think if you were to stop games at half time, Leeds would have finished in a lower position last season. So they win a lot of points in second half of games. Obviously, partly that's to do with the fitness levels that Leeds players have, but also it's because Bielsa is a very good in-game manager. So he can see where weaknesses are or where potential weaknesses are for the opponents are, and he can tweak the tactics so that that is addressed. So I think that sort of happened as well. So in that sense, it was a typical Bielsa performance as well.
So all of that pre-match analysis, the quick in-game change, that was all realised, wasn't it? Kind of the complete plan. So that was that what they were looking for? Did they find what they were looking for and bring down Villa that way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think whenever you play against a team who play in a mid block, you're going to try and attack them before they can get into their structure, because obviously, you know, you're trying to pull them around and once a team is in a sort of rigid block of four and five or four and four, it's very, very hard to really cause any problems. So I think they will probably have come into this game being aware that the verticality, sort of quick attacking, would have been the order of the day. But yeah, I think the narrowness will have been what maybe confused them. And I think if you see that first goal, we broke it down in our video, and the ball sort of withheld Acosta, it goes into the midfield area, and Patrick Bamford's actually being pressured by Tyrone Mings really high up the field, basically around the halfway line, but then Leeds just switch the play really quickly, and from that point your defence is all over the place, and you don't really, and Leeds just exploit the space, and there's nothing really you can do. And I think that's what Leeds will have been trying to do, try and strike as quickly as possible in those turnover situations, because that's how you beat teams with a mid block.
Do you think with Leeds, because they're so well drilled, that it's not the decision making, it seems like it's already done for them. They already know where to pass, what to do. And the players of Leeds are a certain quality, I think I can say. You know, before Bielsa took over, you know, Leeds under Christiansen, under Heckingbottom, weren't performing to these high standards. So it looks like all that pre-match planning, that decision making, it's already made. So I feel like with Villa, and I'm going a bit off script here, When you're facing a team like that, there are certain things you can do. And I know that we say that they did that with the role of Ross Barkley, but I feel like switching the players on the flanks, rotating the players in midfield, you can give them a bit more of a headache and make them maybe second guess, because with that first goal, that's the one that annoys me the most, because I feel like that's the most preventable one of them all. I mean, the other two goals, look, maybe Tyrone Mings is showing a bit too much of the goal to Bamford on his left, but he's surrounded by three players. It's a stunning finish out the box for the other one. So you've got two stunning finishes, and it's that first one, because that first one's the problem, because that's where Villa's head completely drops. I feel like that is the most preventable one, and I feel like just give a Bielsa side a bit much more to think about, because the decisions, it seems like, are already made.
Yeah. Yeah, in the first goal in particular, you see one, Villa are pressing quite high with their front three, but also Target is just miles yeah. forward, and he pressures Helder Costa around, I mean, within 10 yards of the corner flag easily, if not 5 yards. And from there, they just sort of, Costa passes it to Robin Koch. Koch goes down the line. It actually bounces off Tyrone Mings, but falls nicely to Jamie Shackleton, who just plays the ball out quickly wide, and from there it's sort of one ball into Harrison, Rodrigo, one ball into Alioski, back to Rodrigo, takes a shot, and then it comes through to Bamford, who, to be fair to him, I think had quite a decent finish, given that Mings and Martinez were on the line there as well. But yeah, to your point about Leeds being well drilled, I've just shared a thing actually on my personal Twitter, just a quote from the Aspire Academy lecture that he gave in 2016. And he says that the quote is basically Bielsa saying there's a lot of problems in football that can be solved by just having world-class talent. But there's also a load that average players can do that they just don't do because they've not been taught how to do it. And I think that's really the clarion call for what he's achieved at Leeds, because no one is going to pretend that the Leeds squad is good. I don't think, I mean, the Leeds fans will, but I don't think anyone looking at that squad will, I mean, obviously we've bolstered it with some really good players this summer, but we have a lot of very average players who, like last season, were in a situation that most of them hadn't been in before, in challenging for the championship title. And so much of it comes from the system, understanding the system. If you understand the system, you can achieve way more than the sum of the parts of that system. And that's been the watchword of Bielsa's time. And that's what is so enjoyable to watch, I think, about this team, is that it's not that you look at that team and, you know, you'll know as a Villa fan, when you have a world-class player like Jack Grealish, you can achieve a load of, you can achieve a huge amount. But with Leeds, I think the enjoyment I get is just looking at, you know, average players who were finishing 13th in the championship, now challenging with Premier League players, because they understand the structures of the game, rather than because they can dribble past someone, and or they can outrun someone, or they've got a better touch than someone, or they can shoot better than someone. So it's a real pleasure to watch Leeds from that perspective.
It seems almost instinctive that they can just make the right decision at any given time, because I think that's best exemplified in the fact, I think it was 19 shots in the box, and you know, you only score three, but any three out of that 19, you're giving yourself a solid chance. So I feel like it was pretty much always coming. It was on the cards. I did like Villa in the first half because I felt like we kind of set our store. We knew what we was going to do, but it collapsed after that first goal. So yeah, 19 odd shots in the box, always coming, right, John?
Yeah, and I think I think it was, maybe it was the Wolves game. I'm not sure if it was the Wolves game, but more the Villa game. But I think Leeds sort of played something like 20, I can't remember, it was a huge amount, maybe 26 passes into the box that were then received by players. And to put that into perspective, it's sort of, it's something like double that Chelsea have managed all season. So Leeds is just, Bielsa is so good at understanding just the fundamentals of how to play good attacking football. And like you say, with that structure, that obsessional approach to just drilling players into these routines and these interchanges and these rotations, so that the players know, one, how they're supposed to be moving when they're in possession of the ball, and two, how they're supposed to be moving out of possession of the ball. It just makes it means that you create way more attacking options than you would if you just got a bunch of 11 good players and just said, just go out there and express yourself. You know, the classic example is Spurs sort of crawling their way past Burnley last night. And Mourinho is a player who's famous for not really drilling any attacking play or any play in the final third. It's just sort of like you get your players there and you just sort of hope for the best. But, you know, in those situations, you know, you can have Harry Kane and Son Heung-min on your team, and if they're not given the space by the opposition, it becomes very, very difficult for them to score those goals. And in the end, ironically, they did it from a set piece. So yeah, I think with Bielsa, you get an edge that a lot of other clubs just don't get from their manager, which is that he will imbue you with a system that is actually really productive. It will get you into more goal scoring opportunities than you might otherwise. And then the question becomes, as we had last season, you know, if your players are maybe not world class, how is their finishing going to be? Are they going to put away those chances? And that's what, under Bielsa, that's what it's been all the way through his career, because he's never really had those really elite teams. He's always been working with what he would probably call average players, but getting the best out of them. And so you sort of, that's the sort of payoff for that.
Pretty lopsided game as well, for a lot of reasons, but one of the ones noticed is obviously there's always going to be an imbalance with sides and where they attack through the middle, up the left, up the right. There's always going to be, it's not always going to be equal, but a lot of Villa's play obviously went through the left, obviously went through Grealish. And one of the things I noted, of course, following Leeds, Bielsa, Spygate, is how much they would know that's happening. And it did work. Villa had a shot cleared off the line. Jack Grealish broke through how many players to get Villa's probably best chance of the game. The way Ollie Watkins was maybe free up the top and he could have passed, that came to nothing. But were Villa on a hiding to nothing, constantly going up the left? Because it did look like it had to rely on Jack Grealish's very best abilities to even give Villa a chance.
Yeah, I think when you're playing against a team who have Jack Grealish on the side, then you've just got to recognise that you are going to give up chances, and you just sort of pray to the gods that it doesn't come off. And Leeds did, you know, they picked their tactic, and that tactic was we'll have Dallas mainly man marking him, but we'll make sure that there's always sort of double coverage on him, and we'll see what can happen. And obviously, a couple of times that's fallen to pieces, and particularly the chance where he's dribbled from the halfway line and got past a weak challenge from Helder Costa, and then just been able to run at the Leeds defence. And the other time, I guess, Ollie Watkins, who actually was a good player on the night, I thought, especially in the first half as well. You know, he burned, I think, Luke Ayling, and then Grealish had that chance at the back post, which Ayling then cleared off the line. That's part and parcel of what's going to happen in football. I think Bielsa's a sort of manager who won't worry too much about the best player on the other team. He'll just kind of think, well, we'll do our best to limit them as much as we can, but we've got a plan to score more than they do. And in the night, it worked out. Look, there's every chance that Villa could have scored against us in the first half. And that's not to say that Villa would have come out and won necessarily, but it would have been obviously a different game. I do think that we probably had the edge in terms of, well, obviously in terms of chance creation. And I think even if we had gone a goal down in the second half, we probably would have come back quite strongly. But yeah, I think Bielsa, you guys, I think the issue is has got to be that, you know, if you are reliant on someone like Jack Grealish, if a team can keep him quiet, or if, you know, things happen where like Luke Ayling manages to clear the ball off the line, that's your sort of tactic done. And I guess, you know, that's going to be good enough for 90% of the Premier League games that you play in, perhaps. And then occasionally it just won't work out, and that's just football, isn't it? But what else could you do, I suppose, would be the question. Like, how else are you going to get your edge against a team if you aren't able to use your best player? So it's a tricky one to answer, I think. But I don't really think that there's a problem with Villa going through Jack Grealish predominantly. I think that's what Leeds would be doing if we had a player like Jack Grealish on our team as well. We did that with Pablo Hernandez last season in the Championship. So I don't see it as being a necessary problem. I suppose the question then is, well, what if that doesn't work out, then what other angles do you have to your attacking play? Would be my question. But I don't think that's a huge issue in that respect.
Yeah, I think Villa pretty much got what they needed, apart from the goals out of Jack Grealish, two good chances that unfortunately came to nothing. I wanted to speak quickly about Villa's defence, because, look, you go to the amount of shots in the box, two of the Leeds goals from Bamford, I feel like you can get it to the frame of the shot, and it's a pretty tough position for him. He's either in the process of being closed down, or there's three players around him, and he's only kind of got one avenue to hit. Both times he hits it. So what did you make of kind of Villa's defensive actions on the night?
So in preparation for this game, for our material, I watched all of Villa's games from the season so far. And one of the things I've noticed about the way that Villa plays, their mid-block has been really successful in that it doesn't actually lead their defence to being under a huge amount of pressure a lot of the time. And I think the difference between the Leeds game and the previous games they played this season was that Leeds were just getting in between their midfield and the attack, and the defence, sorry, so many times that the Villa defenders were a little bit unsure as to how to deal with things. Both the second and third chances, I think so much more could have been done. I mean, the ball comes into Pat Bamford, and he, on the second goal, he sort of picks the ball up, and I think it's Konsa who's close to him, and then Bamford is able to push away from the defenders, sort of out of the box, and then turn, change the ball from his right to his left, and then get the shot in. And the same is true in the third goal as well, where, and this time probably even worse, where he's got four players around him and he takes the touch, which is quite nice. But then again, you know, we know that he's weak on his right foot. He's given the opportunity to actually shift his whole body position so that he can get onto his left foot again, with four players around him. I just think that's a real defensive issue right there. And I don't know whether or not it's because they thought that he was going to shoot with his right, they didn't want to jump in, but I would have thought with four players around him, one of them could have just got close and just jumped in and seen what happened, because if that happens, then I don't think he scores that third goal. The second goal, you know, you take with a pinch of salt, because, like, look, I've been watching Pat Bamford for very intently for this is the third season now, and I don't expect him to score that. So, you know, you sort of you take that with a pinch of salt. But the third one in particular, I just sort of thought, you know, with four players around him, a player who, you know, is dominant foot is left, is probably going to try and get on his left foot, and he's given all the time and space in the world to actually just shift his body position and get that shot away. I think that's really, really poor defending. And I wonder whether or not that is because Villa's defence haven't actually been under as much pressure this season because of their mid-block working so well previously. So, again, how do you approach that as a Villa fan? Well, you kind of think, well, do we treat this as a one-off, a team that's really worked out how to exploit our mid-block and, you know, our defence aren't going to be under that sort of pressure again? Or do you kind of think, well, that's the sort of thing that even if your mid-block is beaten, you should be hoping that your defence don't have those sort of issues going forward as well? So I think it's probably a balance of the two. I don't think it's sort of thing to really panic about now, but really questions should be asked about the sort of the defensive work that the Villa are doing in training, I would say.
questions arising about Villa's defence. What a surprise. Never heard that one before. But, John, on a final note, did anyone from Villa catch your eye in the best way possible, of course? And I know you're probably going to say Jack Grealish here. You're absolutely entitled to do, but I'll give the floor to you.
I'm not going to wax lyrical about Grealish because I think I've already done that enough in this podcast. I do love him, and I think he's a brilliant player. And he is the player that I'm not a great fan of international football. But he is the player that England should be building around, because you know they don't have anyone else like him that they have that option to do that with. So, yeah, but obviously Grealish is always a pleasure to watch. I'm going to say Ollie Watkins. I was gutted that you guys got him and we didn't. I think in hindsight, you know, that's probably explained by the fact that Rodrigo is able to play a little bit deeper. He's almost playing he's playing in the midfield, but he sort of flits between pushing forward and playing a slightly deeper role with a slightly more creative role. I have no doubt that Watkins could probably play that role too, but just in terms of like his age profile, his ceiling, I think Watkins is a really exciting player. He's a smart player. He's played in smart systems and proven that he can do it. And I thought he caused us a lot of problems in the first half. And I was kind of thankful that you guys dropped off in the second half and didn't really push forward at all, because, you know, between Grealish and Watkins, I thought you would have caused us some problems defensively. So I'll say Grealish and Watkins are the players that impressed me.
Well, thank you, John. That wasn't actually too bad, actually, going through. I thought I was going to be like crying halfway through, but look, it's a reality check, isn't it? And it's not doom and gloom. Villa got 12 points. They've put themselves in a massively good position. Leeds haven't exactly stolen anything from them. It's not a cup final. It's a relegation 6-pointer. You know, Leeds are going on their path. Villa going on their path. Both in really positive positions. And I think my main thing after that was, yeah, I was guilty of using the still images, getting infuriated about going down the left when nothing was happening. But in hindsight, it was slim margins when it come to clearing off the line. It was slim margins making probably the wrong decision at the end. Villa had their chances, probably didn't take them. Leeds had plenty of chances and certainly took them. So just the difference there, not a massive negative, but I genuinely expected to be crying halfway through this. So thank you for the detailed analysis, John.
It's just one game. That's the way you have to look at it. And I guess it's harder for you guys because it's the first game that you lose of the season. We had the same thing. We really had the same sort of experience with the Wolves game, like 5 days prior, just because, again, that's a game that we feel as though, you know, on a different day, it could have gone a different way. And you win that and you're sort of feeling really confident about where you're at. And you would, as Villa fans, you'll be looking at that Leeds game saying, well, you know, if you've beaten teams like Leicester and Liverpool, you kind of think newly promoted side, we should be turning these guys over. And but yeah, it's just one game. It's just one game. There's plenty more to come. And you know, with Villa, you guys have got to be thinking the best, you know, 17th place is what you're aiming for. That's what I'm thinking with Leeds. You know, that's got to be your first thought. Even just staying up this season, I think you guys have been able to have a much better summer window than you would have had you gone down, obviously, and you've not lost any players like that. So it's just a building, it's another stepping stone, a building block in the Premier League sort of tenure that we've both got to look forward to. So I've no doubt that Villa and Leeds will be fine this season, and you know, maybe when we play each other in the return leg, it will be completely different and you guys will do one over on us. That's just the way you have to look at it in football, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope we do, and I hope the fans there. I hope all the Ellen Road faithful there watching Dean Smith's tricky villains do over Bielsa's Leeds finally, a lovely bit of revenge, and I hope they're all there. We're all there to watch it. But yeah, John, wonderful, wonderful having you on. Where can Villa fans find you if they want to harass you about all your Patrick Bamford prize?
So my individual Twitter is at John_McKenzie, but most of the lead stuff that I do is on at All Stats Aren't We. We put up a load of stuff there. We do previews of games as well, so you might want to check it out before we play each other next time, because we try and do a tactics preview to try and set out how other teams play. And yeah, we put a load of interesting stuff up there, hopefully. So there's probably something for you, even if you're a Villa fan.
Perfect. Well, there we go. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to AVFC Extra, an additional dose of Aston Villa content for you, brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast team. If you enjoyed the episode, please do get in touch with us, get involved in the comment sections, tweet us at Claret Blue Pod, or leave us a review on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. We'll catch you again very soon with some more content. Until then, up the Villa.